Okay, here we go. Another episode. Just, leading into it like everything else. Not much been going on here. Probably the same for you. We all know why. It's probably going to come up a couple of times in this episode, so let's just talk around it the best that we can. Let me get this microphone sorted out, and we will get into it. There we go. I'm on the right window, and let's get started. This one here I got from PC Gamer. It's that someone taught an AI to draw dicks after feeding it 25,000 doodles of penises. So, yeah, the quick context here. Back in 2016, Google wowed everyone with an artificial intelligence called Quick Draw that can predict what you're drawing, unless it's a penis. That glaring and presumably intentional omission was soon rectified by Mozilla, I suppose the people that make the web browser, who made a quick riff on Quick Draw that could detect if you were drawing a penis and then chastise you for it. Now, here's the thing. The data used to train that AI to pick up when you're drawing a dick and stop you has now been made public. And so, of course, people are going to use it for evil. And that is why this new AI called Dick RNN, which stands for Recursive Neural Network, has been trained on that same database that Mozilla used to detect if you were drawing a dick and try to stop you, to then just completely draw dicks on its own. They've got a GitHub repository here, so you can just download it and make it draw all the dicks that you want. I haven't seen any of the dicks firsthand, but apparently it does a good job. Here's another one here from Junkie. Elijah Wood dropped into a fan's Animal Crossing island because the turnip prices were good. So, yeah, if you're familiar with Animal Crossing, that on Sunday the leaky nose pig can sell you turnips, and they kind of work like stocks, where the price fluctuates every day. And the hope is that you buy them at a certain price, which is usually around like 95 to 100 and something bells. You want to be able to flip them for a good markup. Now, as these things regularly happen, someone tweeted out saying that their price for turnips was 599 bells on their island. And with online play, that you can visit other people's islands, and a big incentive to do so is when these turnip prices are blowing up. And as this article mentioned, that for this person, they had a very special DM from Elijah Wood, Frodo himself. Apparently, as you would kind of expect from his general demeanor, that he was a lovely island guest, sold his turnips, complimented the island, and asked if he could pick some flowers before doing so. I've seen some rather ridiculous requirements from some people when they have these prime bell turnip prices, such as, you know, saying that you're not allowed to shake trees and you're not allowed to sprint through flowers, because if you run fast through a flower bush, you do that too many times, the flowers fall off and you have to wait for them to grow back again. That apparently some people, when they're visiting someone else's island, see it as free invitation to do whatever they want. So they've had to put up these restrictions to stop people from being assholes instead of the decent human beings that Animal Crossing encourages you to be. So good news there for any Elijah Wood stands, which I'm sure there's some. You maybe watched Wilfred, or what else was he in? He was in that the Holistic Detective Agency's one that was started by Max Landis, wasn't he? That sort of got the boot after all that. Anyway, here's another one from CNET. Mini renames Cooper EV's Corona spoke wheels due to coronavirus. I said it was going to come up. Here it is. And this one, really, what do you say to this? Why would you call anything like Corona spoke wheels or just Corona anything? Like, it wasn't really a very catchy term, like, before all this took off. There was the beer and that was it. It doesn't even... The wheels, let's be honest, they don't even look good. I don't know why they made such a big deal out of it. How to describe these wheels? Let's say, they look like... Well, the best way to describe them is the way that they've been renamed. They've been renamed to the Power Spoke, and this actually makes a bit of sense. The Power Spoke makes perfect sense, as the wheels are said to resemble the design of a UK power outlet. And this is also, despite Mini being owned by a German company, Mini still likes to flaunt its UK heritage. Because that's pretty much what it is. That if you were to imagine what would be a regular plus symbol, with three of the sides hollowed out, technically making it maybe an eight-spoke wheel all up, however, one side of the plus is elongated to go into the center, and each of the three connecting dashes are segmented off and hollowed out. It's really... they don't look great, and... it's pretty much what you'd expect an electric vehicle's wheels to look like. You know, one of those hideous, ostentatious things that never should have gotten past the concept stage that let you know that the wanker driving past is driving an electric vehicle. That's pretty much what they are. Here's one from Adweek.com. Social distancing proves bad for gum and mint sales. And this is the sort of thing that really, of course, sales on everything's down, but because there's so much of a downturn, it's not the sort of thing you think about until someone writes an article about it. As it says here, Hershey's chairman, president, and CEO, Michelle Gross-Buck, said the widespread practice of social distancing has hurt company sales of gum and mints. In recent weeks, demand has dropped 40 to 50%. These categories are much more functional than emotional, said Buck. Because I don't really know anyone that just enjoys chewing gum. Like, as soon as you leave primary school, seems like the sort of thing that, yeah, you only, not even consume, because you can't eat gum, but you only partake in for not even practical reasons, is it? You're just chewing gum, it's meant to taste minty, then you got this rubbery, mushy thing in your mouth that doesn't go away, that you have to dispose of somehow. But, yeah, everything's on a downturn. But gum would be expected. But because it otherwise occupies so little of my thought space, I didn't even think of it. And it's because everyone's staying home, so you're not worried about how your breath smells because you're not even showering. But, look, it's not all a downside for Hershey's. Here's the closing remarks of the article. Overall, Hershey reported Q1 net sales of $2.04 billion, up 1% compared to last year. In North America, advertising and related marketing costs increased 6.9% due to higher advertising expenses. So there we go. Everything's sorted. I think Hershey's as a company overall is going to be fine. Here's one from the ABC. Didn't get a lot of super useful stuff out of here, but what you can do if your employer is ripping you off with the JobKeeper subsidy. So pretty much the first section of this article is mostly saying make sure that you're actually getting the JobSeeker subsidy, that you haven't just been completely put off and are getting the job seeker subsidy. So there's that. That the easiest way to make sure they're not ripping you off is to make sure that you're actually eligible for it. It's got a nice little table here of the penalties that they could endure if found guilty. So right here, section 135.2 of the Criminal Code, obtaining financial advantage, imprisonment of up to 12 months. They get a bunch of quotes from different lawyers, like from Maurice Blackburn and the like. Here's some stuff here from... What was this one here? A JobWatch Employment Rights Legal Centre Executive Director Zana Bythway said, "Even at reduced hours, they are entitled to that subsidy. They will also know that things aren't right if their pay is ordinarily more than $1,500 per fortnight, and they're still working their same hours. Then they need to be topped up the remaining amount of their wage." So here's the example here. This sounds like a pretty good situation. For an example, an employee who earns $2,000 a fortnight, so that's $1,000 a week. I don't know if that's before or after tax, but that's good money right now as far as I'm concerned. Needs to be paid the full amount by their employer, who can use the subsidy and top it up with $500 to meet their wage. So that's interesting. It means that if you're making more than $1,500 a fortnight, because that's how these things operate, they can't just conveniently break it down to weeks, that the rest of your wage needs to be paid by your employer, which really makes sense. Let's see. Yeah, there's a couple of options here if you have concerns. We've got here a Mr. Sivaraman. Let me see if I can get where he's from. No, probably came from earlier in the article. Here are your options. One, join a union. Unions have shown through this crisis that they're as relevant as they've ever been. You know, the things that the groups that things like Work Choices and all subsequent governments have eaten away at to render almost ineffective. Two, get legal advice. And three, you can contact the Fair Work Ombudsman. So yeah, that you can your options if your employer is ripping you off right now is to either talk to a union, to get legal advice, or put in a dispute through the ombudsman. So while you're struggling to pay the rent right now, you can wait for them to hopefully get around to your case and go up to your employer and say, "Hey, you better stop that. Stop ripping your employees off, or we just might do something about it." So that's the best you can hope for. And who handles JobKeeper disputes? The Fair Work Commission has the power to hear disputes about the JobKeeper provisions under the Fair Work Act. Mrs. Blythway said the JobWatch service has been inundated with calls from distressed and confused workers over the JobKeeper benefit. They're finding that their working conditions are being changed to their detriment and they're not receiving the full benefit of the scheme, she said. So yeah, you can go to the Fair Work Commission, say, "I'm not getting paid properly through this JobKeeper supplement. Can you do something about it?" And then, by the time they get back to you, they can bust down your door, go up to your petrified and dried out skull, because the rest of your bones have blown away like it's in the desert, and they can slip a check for the rest of the money that you're owed under your teeth, and walk away knowing that their job is done. So yeah, if you would like to eventually get the money that your employer owes you, there's your option. Go talk to the Fair Work Commission as if they haven't been completely inundated with everything else that's going on, and you just might get paid eventually, because there's really no guarantees. There was one mention in this article that employers were going to put in their staff down to reduced hours, getting the JobKeeper subsidy, and then keeping most of that for themselves to cover ongoing costs. Here's another one. This one will, Jesus, I don't know if this will cheer you up anymore or what. From bandt.com.au. Instagram gives Novak Djokovic's wife false information label over 5G post. So, yeah, again, here's another one of a social media company wringing their hands and hee-hawing over basic misinformation that should not be given the opportunity to spread to start with. So, this Novak Djokovic's wife, it's got her actual name here somewhere, we should use that, Jelena, put up a post captioned, "What are your coronavirus thoughts? Lots of videos going around these days debating the current situation with the coronavirus. Causes, cures, prevention. Whoever has time, please check this one out and let me know your thoughts. Does anyone recognize who this guy is? Kisses and lots." So she doesn't even know who the guy in the video is. Fucking hell. This video goes for 10 minutes, and it's some guy conflating 5G with coronavirus. So she's watched this whole thing, has no idea who the guy is, has done no further research, but has turned over to her almost 500,000 Instagram followers to be like, if you know any more about this, please let me know. That apparently it said that the somewhere that the video had been taken down. I think that may have been the original video. But don't worry, Instagram is on the case, because this video now displays a warning before it can be played. False information, the video is now labeled, reviewed by independent fact checkers. You can still watch the video, but just to let you know that if you do watch it, that all the media companies and the people in control don't want you to. So that's really going to stop the spread here, I think. That thank God Instagram's on the case. And as the article closes out, it follows controversial comments made by Djokovic's husband Novak early this week about the possibility of vaccinating pro tennis players against COVID-19 should a vaccine become available. Here we go. Personally, I am opposed to vaccination, and I wouldn't want to be forced by someone to take a vaccine in order to be able to travel, Djokovic said. But if it becomes compulsory, what will happen? I will have to make a decision. I didn't do an accent because I don't know where he's from. But fucking hell, why do people like tennis players always just have the most fucking names? Honestly, that whole section there was like a Trash Future episode. Here's one that I got from... this is from the Mary Sue. How do I pronounce this name? Shalane Woodley discusses the secret life of the American teenager's anti-sex message. The only reason I mention this is because when I first moved down to Melbourne, my first roommate, she was one of those people that, you know, goes to work and comes home and just watches TV until, I suppose, bedtime. And I just figured an easy way to keep the peace with her was to download TV shows for her to keep her happy. Didn't, like, properly work, but it was a bit of a connection that we had. And one of the shows that she wanted me to download was The Secret Life of the American Teenager, which I'd never heard of before. Looked like absolute dog shit. And, yeah, was essentially just a massive abstinence message program, fucking whatever. And one of the big things that really stood out to me about this show is they always referred to it as having sex. There was never any euphemisms, nothing else around it. It was always talking about, did you hear about them two having sex with each other? So what if I had sex with him? It struck me as weird. And the reason why I'm using this the website, the Mary Sue, is this was initially an interview on the website Bustle, which is probably even worse. And because it's an interview, it's a lot less filtered. There'd be more you'd have to cut through. And they get involved with talking about things like astrology, like her Saturn year has been disrupted, and talked openly about sex and sexuality. So yeah, because I looked at the original Bustle interview to maybe link to that instead, but then when I heard him talking about Saturn years and looked up what that was, that I decided, fuck it, I'm just going to go with the summary. But he was a big thing with it. For Woodley, when she signed in for The Secret Life, it had been after reading 3 episodes, but the contract was for 6 years. So apparently it's that the first 3 episodes were kind of promising. I think she played the lead who ended up getting pregnant, and, you know, it's a big, I suppose, anti-abortion, pro-abstinence TV show about how having sex and getting pregnant in your teenage years can absolutely ruin your life. And so they got people in by, I suppose, having somewhat normal opening episodes, and then just descended from there, as the article says. Yet, as the show continued, it took on a pro-abstinence message in which characters wore promise rings, vowed to save themselves until marriage, and shame those who engage in intercourse. And, yeah, this is one of the interesting things about the whole American approach to abstinence and all that. Like here, losing your virginity was always treated with such weight but then casual sex right after was the norm. STDs only came up to highlight a moral failure or to scare people rather than it being a relatively normal part. While ideally people shouldn't get their only sex education from television or fan fiction, has there in brackets, because this is the Mary Sue we're talking about, shows that are for teens should, at the very least, not shame them for sex, present only one way of sexual health to be accurate. So, look, we'll move in on from that. It just caught my eye because I knew of this this otherwise under-the-radar show that you shouldn't give a shit about otherwise, and so I just wanted to bring it up. Here's one from Ars Technica. Fox News hosts have measurable effect on COVID cases, study finds. This one was quite an interesting read. It's a breakdown on the differences between people who watch Sean Hannity and Tucker Carlson, and how whichever show that you preference watching influences your likelihood of contracting COVID-19. And you may think that there's a lot of variables there, but it's actually true. This is a... let me just find a section in the article here talking about... yeah, right here. That Hannity and Carlson are Fox News' two biggest stars, each commanding around 4 million viewers for their respective evening shows. While often it can be hard to see daylight between their ideological pronouncements on air, in early 2020, the two had markedly different lines on the coronavirus outbreak. Carlson began regularly covering the virus in January. During February, he did so with a growing sense of alarm that the United States could experience a heavy death toll, the same month that saw much inaction on the part of the federal government. By contrast, Hannity gave the virus almost no attention in February, and when he began to discuss the virus at the same frequency as Carlson during the first 2 weeks of March, it was to minimize the threat compared to the numbers of annual deaths attributed to car crashes, shootings, or seasonal influenza. Because, as we all know, that you can walk out on the street, shake hands with someone, and catch a car crash. Hold on, my phone's ringing. I haven't paid my gas bill, so, no, my electricity bill, so that's probably what this is. All right, and I'm back. They already called me once today, so this is getting a bit much. I should actually probably get around to paying my... it's bulk hot water. That's the one that those fucking criminals charge me for. Suppose I should probably pay that. Anyway. So Hannity was downplaying the severity of it. And it's as a direct result that a lot of his viewers were more likely to catch it. It says right here, the study comes from a group of researchers led by the University of Chicago's Leonardo Bertstein and uses survey data gathered in April from 1,045 regular viewers of Fox News aged 55 and over to determine the timing of behavioral changes in response to the virus. When people began to cancel travel, isolate, increase the frequency of hand washing, and so on. Here's something right from the research itself. Greater local viewership of Hannity relative to Tucker Carlson tonight is associated with a greater number of COVID-19 cases starting early March and a greater number of deaths resulting from COVID-19 starting in mid-March. So, of course, there are a lot of variables here, but this is this is proper research that they're able to adjust for that and factor things in. As it says here, the study is well controlled for other variables, for example, how rural an area is, how far from saddle or differential rates of health insurance that could affect the local spread of COVID-19. For example, geography or rates of health insurance or educational attainment at the county level could explain these results. So this was actually quite well thought out and considered, and it actually turns out that, I'm here in Australia, we don't fortunately get these fucking shows here. But if you're unfortunately in the States and you've got some Fox News watching the family, that depending on which show they watch, could come down to how likely they are to die. Because that's pretty much it. That's the basics of it. Here's another one from ABC again. How Kieran De Silva got his rent reduced after losing his job due to coronavirus outbreak. And this one... I'm going to manage expectations right up front. This seems like very much a dream situation. I wouldn't expect this as a result for myself. Especially, I've already tried to have this conversation with my real estate agent, and they don't seem to be interested in doing anything at all. So it says here that he pays $865 a month for a bedroom he shares with his girlfriend in Camperdown. The total household rent is $3,910 a month. When another member of his house lost work because of the pandemic, he was forced to ask for a rent decrease. And so, yeah, Kieran also got in touch with his was it the real estate agent or just the landlord? I think it was just the landlord. Because this here, the landlords agree to reduce the monthly rent by $1,710 to $2,200. So his rent went down to $2,200. It went down to that for 3 months, which worked out to be 44% less than the usual rent. He says, you got to be super direct about it. Be transparent and ask for what you need. He also said it was important to go into the situation in good faith, assuming that the landlords would be empathetic and not be rude or pushy. Oh, man. This guy really lucked out. Lisa Pennell from Ray White Real Estate agreed empathy was key when going into a negotiation like this. That just rings of some rich fucking irony. That, yeah, people should be empathetic. It would be nice if that went both ways. I've prepared a bit of something else here. Here's a text that I got from my real estate agent. Financially affected by COVID-19? OzGov offers help. Find out more. This is just a friendly reminder that your monthly rent was not fully paid. So that's pretty much saying that you're having trouble paying rent? Go ask the government for money. All of these payments out there, the job seeker one, the job keeper one, these are meant to be to help people live. These are not meant to line the pockets of landlords and real estate agents who can go off and pretend that nothing is happening. This is meant to help those directly affected survive. So this guy, old mate Kieran, he is just really lucked out by having a landlord who doesn't need the money as greedily as mine does. Because I can tell you what, my fucking landlord is technically a superannuation fund, so not even a person. So all of my money for rent gets dropped into this tax-free environment, and I know that they own at least one other flat in my building. So when I asked my real estate agent just how badly they needed the money, and perhaps if there was going to be any considerations around rent that they might be able to go without for a while, they told me that my landlord's financial situation was none of my business. That even though that they will take all of my money when I stop working, then they'll just chuck it into their pile of rent that they've already accrued, when what it really feels like is whether that rent goes in or not would make very little difference to them compared to myself. They won't even begin to consider my situation until I have nothing left and I have to go on to government benefits. So, really, Kieran, shout out to a real one. Aren't you lucky that you found a considerate landlord before the shit really hit the fan? Alright, changing tact. This one from SBS. Piracy claims over Malcolm Turnbull's book to be referred to the AFP. So, if you remember, you know, what feels like decades ago now, when Malcolm Turnbull was Prime Minister, that he got ousted and he's written a book about it. And the backstabbing and conniving has not stopped. The piracy claim has been referred to the Australian Federal Police. The publisher has sent cease and desist notices to a top aide within Prime Minister Scott Morrison's office for allegedly circulating pirated copies of the e-book. This is just the most fucking ridiculous thing. Senior cabinet ministers were sent copies of Mr. Turnbull's memoir, which his publishers blamed on one of Mr. Morrison's staff. Nick Liu, a senior advisor to the Prime Minister, has reportedly apologized for circulating illegal copies of A Bigger Picture ahead of its public release on Monday. Mr. Turnbull told Guardian Australia Mr. Liu had been contacted by his lawyers, acknowledged that he had circulated the digital version of the book to 59 acquaintances. So this has pretty much just gotten around to all the top people in cabinet. And yeah, it just shows that even over a year after he got kicked out of the top job and has left politics, that the Liberal Party just still fucking hates him. That there's a couple of quotes here from people. Here we go. Agriculture Minister David Littleproud said a personal friend outside the government sent him the book. There was one here who went, look at Foreign Minister Maurice Payne denied the copy she was sent came from the Prime Minister's office. And she said that she just deleted it as soon as it turned up in her inbox. Much like a lot of the information around the raiding of the union officers that she apparently orchestrated. Just got rid of that. Never happened. Don't ask her. An extension to that piece is from theconversation.com. Secrets and Scandals, where Malcolm Turnbull's memoir fits into the rich history of prime ministerial books. This was an interesting quick read, just because it talks a bit about the history of memoirs from prime ministers. Until the 1960s, prime ministerial memoirs were the exception, not the rule. Between 1945 and 1990, just three former prime ministers chose to publish books about their political lives. Two of them, Billy Hughes and Robert Menzies, produced two books each, and both political veterans sought to avoid telling tales out of school. Both seemed more interested in foreign affairs, particularly our imperial relationship to the UK in the case of Menzies. Was Menzies the prime minister that pretty much spent all his time in the UK and was a massive Queen simp? I think he was. One of the more recent exceptions, going off those standards, was the dismissal of the Whitlam government provoked both Sir John Kerr and Gough Whitlam to publish their memoirs. After reading extracts of Kerr's Matters for Judgment, Whitlam decided to set the record straight immediately by writing The Truth of the Matter, his second book, The Whitlam Government, also designed to make a political splash, promising to explain the development and implementation of his policy program. The book was timed for release on the 10th anniversary of the dismissal itself, ensuring maximum publicity. So there's a book there from Sir John Kerr, both tool of the CIA and the royal family to oust a progressive government, and then Gough stepped up to tell people what really went on. It talks here about how Bob Hawke released a book, caused a bit of controversy in the Labour Party afterwards. Then Keating released a book as well, which caused a bit of controversy afterwards, just trailing back to the Hawke one. He accused his rival and successor, Paul Keating, of calling Australia the arse end of the world during an argument about the Labour leadership. Not wrong. Perhaps one of the better Keatingisms. John Howard's Lazarus Rising was pretty asinine, as you'd kind of expect, and after the 2013 election, was reissued with a new chapter that touted Tony Abbott's high intelligence, discipline, and good people skills. It's just Lazarus Rising. I'm sure it makes sense when you read it, but to me it's just such a fucking stupid name, and so it's just one of those ones that sticks in your head. Then, of course, Kevin Rudd released a book. Julia Gillard's released a book. Kevin Rudd, I think, has done two, and a massive two-parter, because he's still so cut up about things. And then this one has come out. There's been a few other controversies as well, of people publishing books with actual minutes from cabinet meetings. And an interesting point here is that after a book in the UK of a similar nature came out, that they decided that such material should be kept secret for 15 years, but civil servants could do little to stop their political masters from publishing. So there's some censorship for you in the UK, that you can't release any details about your time in office for 15 years until afterwards. Here's a quick one I got from UpRocks, but this has been going around, that Oktoberfest has been cancelled. It was set to take place between September 19th and October 4th. And, yeah, pretty much, you know, they said, fuck it. Pretty devastating for the local economy. Oktoberfest employs 8,000 full-time plus 5,000 part-time employees. Yeah, the festival injects $1.3 billion into Munich's economy every year. Wow. But this isn't without precedent. Since the festival started in 1810, it's been cancelled 24 times due to cholera outbreaks, world wars, and the most major long-term event. But, yeah, so it's not the first time it's been cancelled. So this thing happens. It's unfortunate, but not a super big deal. And when it does come back, it'll probably be on a smaller scale and will just eventually grow over time. Alright, here's one, as word's been going around. I got this one from BuzzFeed. I don't know if there's any more reliable sources. But here's a breakdown of what's been reported about Kim Jong-un's health. So, this one, a lot of people are making memes and that, saying how he's dying. I've got a bit of a mention that apparently his hot sister is set up to take his place. The biggest gist of this article is not saying anything that's happened to him, but what hasn't happened. Saying that on April 12th, North Korean state media reported that Kim had visited an airbase and observed drills by fighter planes. That's normal. But on Tuesday, April 14th, state media did not mention him as attending North Korea's latest weapons test, which he normally supervises. Most significantly, on April 15th, North Korea's most important public holiday took place without any mention of Kim's involvement. So, this is all a lot of speculation from people not seeing him around recently. Apparently, there was a bit of a gossip magazine from South Korea alleging that he's had some degree of heart surgery and was recovering from that. But this is all going off what people aren't seeing. So take that with a hint of speculation, but I've got another article queued up here which could point to a bit of an upside. Here's another one from the ABC. Coronavirus kills up to twice as many men as women, and the reason is in our genes. So this one, if you've got a mate that likes to carry on about how suicide rates amongst men are much higher than women, and that's a big problem because the courts always take their kids away from them, and that, you know, divorced dads should be allowed to see their kids more often. Yeah, it's usually a lot of set dressing for misogyny. Send them this article, because they'll probably love it as well. What it mentions here is how women tend to live 6 years longer than men, so there are more elderly women than men in the vulnerable population. The other major factor is the presence of chronic diseases, particularly heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. These are all more common in men than women, which might account for some of the bias. Gets into some quite interesting biology here of how, because men only have one X gene, that they also have less estrogen in their system, which is apparently a good tool to fight against diseases, and that one of these Y genes is just full of a lot of repetitive junk DNA. It's interesting, and how we have increased testosterone, which makes us more susceptible to diseases, as well as just not wanting to go to the doctor and more stupid risk-taking behavior. And so apparently it makes us more vulnerable to coronavirus. So I just thought that was interesting, that if you'd like to incense one of I'm trying to think of the diplomatic term here, but you know what I'm talking about. There's guys out there who like to point out the differences between men and women, feel like that should give them certain entitlements, and think that because of that, things aren't fair for men. Well, send them this article and watch them just absolutely fucking rage. Here's a lighter piece from The Verge. New Yorker adds co-op to its online crossword puzzles. So this is almost like a bit of an opposite of Playboy, I'd say. If you're going to go to New Yorker, only do it for the crosswords. Skip the articles. And that you can pretty much play this over anything. One person can be on the desktop, one can be on their phone. You can check out different cues, and you can work on a crossword together. It's a good bit of fun if you've got nothing else to do. Here's another one from bandt.com.au. Kmart forced into embarrassing apology after kids' frozen diary includes list of sex toys and positions. So, yeah, this is probably what happens when you just buy bulk shit from overseas and do no quality control. So there's a picture here that it has on one page three identical columns of different tables. One with the heading sex toys. It's got things like anal beads and butt plugs and that, and then locations. So, and this is quite literally on the cover of this. It is just Frozen 2. And in amongst it all is, yeah, that if anyone who's big into Frozen 2 and then also maybe wants to wear a butt plug in public, that you can finally catalog it. This was probably meant to go into a very different type of diary, but now here it is. This is where things are heading. Another quick one. I got the article from Fast Company, but this is technically just from the slow motion guys on YouTube. These guys try to break YouTube with slow-mo glitter, and it's gloriously unwatchable. The general cut and thrust of this is the slow-mo guys, quite deliberately with this video, are pointing out how shit YouTube's compression algorithm is, and have used slow-motion glitter to highlight it. That when you have a lot of details going on in the screen at once, such as slow-motion glitter falling and moving around, it's very hard for YouTube videos to render that in any level of detail. So if you open up that video, you check it out, and just skip straight to the glitter part, you'll notice that everything looks out of focus and just generally shit. Whether YouTube will do anything about it, it's hard to say. And here we go, screencrush.com. The entire weekend box office report is from a single drive-in in Florida. This one's a bit over a week old, so maybe things have changed. But as it says here, it's not unusual in 2020 for a major film to open on upwards of 4,000 screens in the United States, and for those major films to pull in tens of millions of dollars in a matter of days. And here's the thing. There's a bit of clarification here. This drive-in isn't the only theater that's playing movies, but it is the only one playing new movies. In fact, the weekend box office report on the website The Numbers contains just two movies playing at one theater in the United States last week. For the record, they're the World War II mime biopic Resistance and the psychological thriller Swallow, both from IFC Films. And as it says here, it's not that there's one theater open in the entire country. There's a few scattered drive-ins across the U.S. This one in Florida is the only one playing new films and reporting their grosses. Good. You can really tell that this pandemic wasn't planned if those are the only new movies playing at the moment. But if there was any degree of conspiracy, you would have thought that the new Marvel movie would have dropped just beforehand, so all of these people who are ignoring the quarantine measures would feel compelled to go jump into the movie theater and get themselves sick. Another one from PCGamer.com. The world's smallest handheld gaming PC has a built-in Xbox controller. And, yeah, this thing is quite interesting. Imagine it's like you either think of it as a tiny laptop or a bigger Game Boy Advance SP. It's an interesting way of describing it. From what I can tell, it's not inaccurate. At its core, this is an 8-inch laptop, but it's also designed specifically for handheld use, with an integrated Xbox 360 gamepad of sorts. There's a pair of ultra-durable 3D joysticks above the keyboard, along with a D-pad on the left and a set of XYAB buttons on the right. There's also shoulder buttons, and this is the very visceral description. If an Nvidia Shield, Nintendo Switch, Xbox controller, and a Windows laptop had a foursome, this would be the love child of their romp in the design lab. The specs on here are a bit of a mixed bag. Like, it's got an 8-inch screen, but it only has a resolution of 1280 by 800. But then, you know, a lot of good stuff. It's got a Generation 10 i5, 16 gigs of RAM, 512 storage. Only has integrated graphics though, nothing fancy. And this thing actually kind of looks all right. Of course, I wouldn't get it. I can't really see anyone getting it. But it's one of those things, you're glad it exists. And if I can become a little bit nerdier for a second, that once they get all that ARM architecture sorted out, and you could have an always-on, much more energy-efficient CPU in there, it would get even better. Here's another one from Adweek.com. He's back. Baby Nut returns to social media after months-long disappearance. And this is talking about, if you're not familiar with the whole marketing campaign, that, what is it, Mr. Peanut did? No, that nut company, whatever the fuck they are. They killed off their, like, 104-year-old mascot, Mr. Peanut, as a marketing ploy in the lead-up to the Super Bowl. Of course, that all went to shit. An actual famous and respected sportsman, Kobe Bryant, died in the lead-up to the Super Bowl. So then they had to unveil their Baby Nut, it's the new version of the mascot, at the Super Bowl after restraining the amount of promotion that they could do because it was talking about, in their mind, a dead celebrity. But then, after Baby Nut taking the social media world by storm, not even 2 full weeks after his resurrection, Baby Nut went silent. Now, I only bring this up because I've seen a lot of quote tweets, that's what I'm looking for. A lot of quote tweets of all the shit that Baby Nut had put up on Twitter, pretty much saying, fuck you, Baby Nut, that everything was good until you came along. And, like, everything went to shit after you came here, Baby Nut. So apparently he went quiet for, it would have been a couple of months now, and now Baby Nut is finally fucking tweeting again. So I'm going to come out and let you know that this podcast is vehemently anti-Baby Nut. And if you want to quote tweet him, tell him to just go back and fucking die again, that not only are you welcome to, we encourage it. Okay, here's another one from Sydney Morning Herald. Winter of discontent ahead. Pubs tipped to stay shut until September. And the general gist of this article is they interview a lot of experts. So, Peter Collingyong, a professor of microbiology at the Australian National University, Tony Blakely, a professorial fellow in the etymology at University of Melbourne, Professor Ben Cowie, an infectious disease specialist at the Peter Doherty Institute, Mary Louise McClaws, a professor of epidemiology at the University of New South Wales, Julie Leisk, a professor of public health at the University of Sydney. Just, yeah, a lot of people saying that it's planned to take at least a month before anything could open again, and that even then, pubs and clubs are sort of at the bottom of the list of things that should open. And as the in the headline of the article, not probably going to happen until September, at least that's what's recommended. So yeah, unfortunately nothing going to be picking up there too soon. Here's one from Mashable, and here's the throwback to the Kim Jong-un piece. We regret to inform you that people are standing Kim Jong-un's sister. So yeah, with the way that things are set up there in North Korea, that if anything were to happen to Kim, his sister would apparently has a more than 90% chance of taking his place. And yeah, people think that she looks kind of hot. That this isn't aided by the fact, I don't even know if it's photoshopped or not, but there's a picture of her running along somewhere with a piece of bread in her mouth, very anime style. And as you know, the running with a piece of bread in your mouth is anime code for please draw me having a tentacle lay eggs inside me. And so everybody's going off about it, showing pictures of her being all like, felt cute, might violate some human rights later. So her name is Kim Yo Jong. And look, another thing is that there's already a shed base of her. If you don't know who the Shad Man is, do not look him up. But, yeah, everyone's like, wow, that was fast. Can't believe Shad Man already did a thing of her. But apparently he did that 2 years ago when she first came to prominence at the Winter Olympics. So, just know that, yeah, sure, you can look at her and we can all make jokes. But let's not forget where she may end up running and what she'll do there. But, I mean, it seems like a big way to disarm the seriousness of someone. That, yeah, how could you take a nuclear threat from her seriously when everyone in the replies is asking her to step on their balls? Or maybe North Korea won't be able to take irony too well, and when they threaten to nuke somewhere and all the reply guys are saying, nuke me please, they might just take that as an invitation. Another one from The Conversation. These last couple of articles aren't in pocket, so I can't highlight them the way that I usually do. How Shinzo Abe has fumbled Japan's coronavirus response. So, this is talking about that things in Japan have been going all right. That a relatively low rate of infections from January to March was credited by some to Japanese social norms. Bowing instead of handshakes and hugs, the use of masks in flu season, and generally high standards of personal hygiene. Then Japan has had a long reputation for conformity and adherence to rules, so high level of compliance with public safety directions was expected. But old mate, I think he prefers to be called Abe Shinzo in the Western world, that Abe Shinzo just hasn't been responding too much, if at all. Been trying to downplay it, that the Diamond Princess cruise ship was quarantined in Yokohama, and at least 23 passengers were allowed to disembark and go home without being tested. 19 government employees returned directly to the Tokyo offices after visiting the stricken vessel. And then, more than 700 cases were eventually linked to the cruise ship in total. So it's not just here in Australia that we like to just fuck around with cruise ships and let them do what they want. There was a lack of decisiveness around the Tokyo Olympics, that it was only in late March that they mentioned it would be postponed, and only once countries started to pull out. So it's not just here. And in another way that things just seem to be repeating everywhere, Tokyo's governor outshines Abe. As cases began to spike in late March, Tokyo governor Yuriko Konike held an emergency press conference to urge residents to refrain from non-essential outings, such as visits to parks and view cherry blossoms. So once again, the national leader isn't performing well, so it comes down to someone in a you know, still high-level public capacity, but lower proportionally, to step up and do the job. So this is just a trend that's happening everywhere. Here's another one from mediaweek.com.au. This is an interesting, weird one. Push button Stan. Streamer gets a home on Hisense remote controls. So you know about Stan, right? The Australian streaming service. Well, you know how TV remotes sometimes have that Netflix button? You know, so that then your parents can just get to it straight away and they don't need to call you up a couple of times a week to figure out how to get to it. Well, apparently Stan has a bit of a relationship with the TV manufacturer Hisense, and now if you buy a Hisense TV, it'll have a Stan button instead. And the first thing I just thought of when I saw that is, in a couple of years, that is going to make for a fucking weird artifact on TVs. That if anything, you know, when something inevitably happens to Stan and it ceases to exist, you're going to go to your grandparents' place and see the TV remote and be like, wow, a fucking Stan button on a remote. It's ridiculous. Because Hisense is like the perfect TV for that, because they make the big screen ones, but they're always cheaper. So it's the sort of people, like, say, a grandparent who has to do a reluctant upgrade on their TV because their current one doesn't work, they would end up getting a Hisense. And, of course, it's going to have a Stan button. Just blows my fucking mind. I can't wait to, you know, see that on some, like, Australian vaporwave sort of themed software gore abandonware Facebook page. And everyone like, wow, a Stan button. Remember Stan? Here's one from The Guardian. Melbourne woman accused of driving car onto train station's pedestrian overpass. The 21-year-old allegedly used a ramp at Kananook Railway Station in Victoria to reach the overpass before driving down three flights of stairs. So, yeah, you know the big pedestrian footbridges that go over a train station? She drove a car. She can't have driven it up the one, but she definitely drove it down. And then of course, at the end, it looks like whatever the deal with the train station is there, there's just a door at the end of it, so she could drive her car down there, but if she wanted to somehow access the road afterwards, there was no way that was going to happen. As it mentions here, police breath tested the woman, who returned a reading of 0.158, more than three times the legal limit of 0.05. She's expected to be charged with drink driving and careless driving. Man, it makes me just want to try look this up on social media to get, like, the whatever she would have posted about it, or at the time, or her friends would have posted about it afterwards. Shit's just wild. Well, that's everything that I intended to get through this time. Ran a little bit longer than I wanted to, but here we are. So we'll wrap things up now. Thanks for giving a listen, if you have. I still haven't uploaded this to any podcatchers yet, but this will go on the feed once it's finally up. And I'll catch you around.